Books on Tape presents The Gun Catch by Dewey Lambden, read by John Lee. Foreword. For those readers unfamiliar with the preceding installments in the adventurous, some would say reprehensible, nefarious, venal, just like a man rake hellish squanderings of a ruling class pig, and mind you, this chronicler has heard it all at one time or another, but they're all politically correct, or smugly moral carpers, so who the bloody hell cares what they think? Life of our heroic, if somewhat lazy, Alan Lurie, Royal Navy. Allow me to fill you in on some of the highlights of his curriculum vitae. Epiphany Sunday, 1763. Born a bastard. Now there's auspicious onset for you. St. Martin in the Fields Parish, London, of Elizabeth Lurie, son of Sir Hugo St. George Willoughby, captain of the 4th Regiment of Foot, the King's Own. Mother died soon after, and the infant was raised in the poorhouse, employed as an oakum picker and flax pounder, which showed his nautical bent before he was out of nappies in support of H.M. Dockyards. 1766. Rescued by his father, since he had discovered that the last viable Lurie heir to a positive flood of guineas was none other than our lad Alan, and raised as a gentleman in St. James's Square. There followed the usual hellish childhood and a disappointing series of schools in which Alan Lurie excelled at both his studies and the inventive, some would say inspired, creation of mayhem, one example of which in 1779 resulted in the total demolition, by use of explosives, of the faculty stables and coach house at Harrow. 1780. Arranged to be caught in bed with his half-sister Belinda Willoughby, so he could be exiled, and never know that he was on the verge of being the last male Lurie, due that aforementioned golden shower of yellow boys, and shoved into the Royal Navy as a midshipman before he could even learn to say Jack Ketch. 1780 to 1781, in third-rate line of battleship Ariadne, sloop of war Parrot, and the desperate frigate in the West Indies, where he was thrashed and beaten into a passable midshipman, though of the sort to keep a captain nervous o' nights. Rather a lot of conquests on land and sea, and the theft of a trifling sum of 2,000 guineas off a French prize of war, devilishly well detailed in The King's Coat. 1781-82, in the desperate frigate, participated in the Battle of the Chesapeake, the siege of Yorktown, escaped thence to the evacuation of Wilmington, North Carolina, by Crown forces in November of 1781, where he made the acquaintance of the Chiswick family and the lovely Caroline Chiswick, who figures prominently in this adventure. See The French Admiral. 1782-83, still in desperate, serving as midshipman and master's mate, participated in Admiral Sir Samuel Hood's Battle of St. Kitts, in English Harbour, Antigua, rated past midshipman by an examining board, February, 82. Promoted lieutenant and sent aboard the Shrike, Brig of War, as first officer by clerical error. Commerce warfare on the Cuban coasts, took part in an expedition to swing Muscogean and Seminole Indians into war on England's side, which effort failed, and it was not his fault. Participated in Captain Horatio Nelson's abortive attempt to retake Turk's Island from the French in the spring of 83, and ended up in temporary command of Shrike 2 weeks before the Revolutionary War ended, and sailed her back to England to pay off at Deptford Hard. See The King's Commission. 1784-86, fleeing an irate, titled husband who'd caught him in flagrante delicto, which seems to be his way of life, and an allegedly pregnant housemaid, Lurie takes service in the Far East in the 80-gun, third-rate ship-of-the-line Telesto, now disguised as an independent trader or country ship. Voyage to Cape Town, Calcutta, and Canton, China as fourth officer, where Telesto hunts down and eventually destroys the French privateer Captain Guillaume Chunda, a right bastard if ever there was one, and his Mindanao pirate allies, the Lanun Rovers. Whilst in India, he remade the acquaintance of his father, Sir Hugo, now on service with the land forces of the Honourable East India Company, to avoid creditors at home. They reconcile as much as they are able, and participate in the final battles together. Ends up with some pirate loot as his personal pelf, and sails for England, the secret task complete, in February of 1786. See The King's Privateer. Lieutenant Lurie, R.N., is now looking forward to the prospect of a peaceful 3-year commission in command of a small vessel with the Bahamas squadron, at least as much as an unwilling Navy officer may look forward to continued active service. But then, with Alan Lurie's singular inability to keep his breeches buttoned, his hands out of the honeypot, his smarmy wit to himself, or his mouth properly shut, there is the distinct possibility that he's going to come a cropper. Again, and judging from his own catastrophic past, we may rest assured that somewhere along the line he simply cannot help getting into both peril and mischief. Now that we have all this out of the way, then, let us proceed with the continuing chronicle of our ne'er-do-well rake-hell. Part 1. Sed tamen, nymphe, cavete, quod cupido pulcher est. Totus est in armis idem, quando nudus est amor. Cras amet qui numquam amavit, quique amavit cras amet. Yet take heed, nymphs, for Cupid is wondrous fair. When love is naked, he is fully armed. Let him love tomorrow who has never loved, and let him who has tomorrow love. Per Vigilium Veneris, Albius Tibulus. Prologue. Is not to be entered into unadvisedly, nor lightly, but reverently, deliberately, the vicar intoned, his voice ringing in stony, rebuking echoes, from the transept of St. George's of the village of Angles Green. Now they bloody tell me, Lieutenant Alan Lurie thought in anguish. And in accordance with the purposes for which it was instituted by God, the vicar continued, casting a chary eye upon the couple before him, which made Alan almost wilt. He directed his gaze to his right, where Caroline stood flushed and trembling, ready to faint with joy, and the smile she bestowed upon him at that moment was so radiant, so shudderingly glorious, that he found himself quaking as well, not completely in terror of his bachelorhood's demise. Into this holy union, Alan Lurie, gentleman, and Caroline Chiswick, spinster, now come to be joined. If any of you assembled may show cause why they may not be lawfully married, speak now. Or else, for ever after, hold your peace, the vicar warned, wincing at the words, as if he expected the Honourable Harry Embleton to charge through the doors at the back of the nave on horseback with sword in hand. The crowd, a devilish thin crowd, Alan noted, fairly bristled and stirred, and a sigh or two, a grumbly cough, could be heard. I require and charge you both here in the presence of God, that if either of you know any reason why you may not be united in matrimony lawfully, and in accordance with God's word, you do now confess it. The Reverend rushed on in breathy relief. The tiniest quirk of a smile touched Alan's lips, in spite of his best intentions, as he mulled over his passionate, albeit brief, marriage to a Cherokee Muscogee Indian girl named Soft Rabbit, and wondered if it counted. No, he sighed, no benefit of proper clergy there, he thought. No way out. Damn me and my enthusiasms for Quim. How do I get myself into these predicaments? Alan groaned. Caroline, will you have this man to be your lawful husband, to live together in the covenant of marriage? The vicar inquired, not without what to Alan seemed a cocked brow in amazement. Will you love him, comfort him, honour and keep him, in sickness and in health, and, forsaking all...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?